Welcome once again to Word on the Hills with me, Gwyn Sheltimer, my co-host Felicity Signal-Reed, and our guest this week, Alan Bland. Each week at this time, we visit with an author from our region. We get an introduction to their work, perhaps a glimpse into their lives. We ask them what prompts them to write and have an opportunity to hear them read from their work. This week, we're very pleased to have Alan with us. Welcome, Alan.
Thank you.
Alan Bland is a very highly qualified insurance executive and consultant, and though he now claims to be semi-retired, he is actually a very busy man. Recently, he has acted as a consultant and prepared opinions as an expert witness at the Superior Court of Ontario, and once at the U.S. District Court in Brooklyn, New York. He enjoys working closely with defense counsel, interviewing defendants, researching cases, and giving his opinion as an expert witness in court, and taking an analytical approach to case review. Alan also enjoys lecturing on insurance matters to business associations and unions. He has worked as a volunteer for several organizations which benefit teenagers. He has hosted and moderated an event for the Toronto Public Library entitled Look Who's Reading Canadian Mysteries, and emceed the Canadian Crime Writers Association's Arthur Ellis Awards. He also finds time to write fiction himself, to study and perform on the saxophone, and to cook. So, Alan, how do you find time for all these activities, especially writing fiction? And what kind of fiction do you write?
Well, the time is a concern, really, and trying to squeeze in other interests, it does become rather difficult. I usually write in the evening, after supper's over and the dishes are cleaned away, then I get down to some writing. What kind of fiction? It varies. Some short stories, some longer pieces. 3 novels completed, a couple of novels half done and hopefully to be completed. The genres are a little mixed. Some of it is tending towards humorous, light fiction. Some is a little darker, and the short stories tend to be like crime stories, basically.
So you're dealing with crime and mystery a lot of the time, and my experience has been that most writers in that genre, because the stories are so plot-driven, tend to start with an outline. Do you do that?
Actually, I tend not to. Usually when I get a germ of an idea, I'll look for character first. And once I have an idea of who my protagonist character is going to be, then I'll try and build around that. And basically, I let the story take over and go where it wants to go.
And do you always know the solution to the puzzle before you start?
Never.
So you're as surprised as the writer.
I tend to be, yes.
So then, if you don't know where the end is, how do you approach the problem of laying out the clues for the reader?
Same way, basically. I just let the process take over, and hopefully one thing leads to another, and I don't get stuck into a dead end where I can't extricate myself. One of the things I have found is that sometimes the piece will finish before I think it's going to, and one ended up as a novella because I just ran out of things to say, and the thing was complete.
Mm-hmm. And then do you have to go back and rewrite several times to sort of plant some red herrings and things like that?
Yeah, I tend to do about 4 drafts. By the time it's finished, I hope it's polished enough.
Right. So which do you prefer, the short stories or the novels?
Actually, I prefer the longer pieces. And I went back to short stories because I'd never really tackled them, and I wanted to see if I could do one. And I ended up writing about 12.
Wow. Yeah. Well, actually, I've found that short stories seem to be more popular these days, too. I don't know whether it's a trend that the publishers are putting out or whether it's the fact that people don't have as much time to read.
Possibly. I've not actually sent very much of my writing out, so I don't know what the responses would be to short pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Initially, I did send some novels out and had reasonably good feedback, and I unfortunately became a little too attached to my opinion of what the book was rather than what the agent's opinion. I had some feedback from some agents in the UK, actually, because most of my books are UK-based because that's where I grew up. And I'd written the first one in first person, and 3 agents came back and said, "Not a bad story. Try in third person."
Oh.
And I thought, whose book is this? And I put it in the drawer and left it there for about 2 years and finally dragged it out, rewrote it, and it did read better, a lot better. But I didn't send it out again.
Oh, well, yeah, you must do that.
Yes.
Do you work entirely alone, or do you belong to a critique group?
Originally, I ran a writer's group in Toronto. I'd finished a course at U of T with Peter Robinson on writing the crime novel and managed to keep several of the people together, and we'd meet in my office downtown once a week, and we'd critique each other's work. And two of the writers out of that group did get published. And following that, because I wanted to do better at dialogue, I took a course at Humber in screenwriting, a summer course, and was fortunate to have John Krasank as my teacher, which, pretty interesting guy. In case anybody's not aware, he wrote Men with Brooms. And John had a very interesting way of dealing with dialogue and getting you to try and get your message across to the reader. And he always insisted, always put a fart joke in there somewhere.
Oh, good heavens.
And I did.
Well. Now, you say you said three completed novels.
Yes.
Do you work with the same characters each time? Is it kind of like a series? You know, do you have a detective you're particularly fond of? Or
no, these three are completely standalone. I wanted to try three different genres: the police procedural, then the sort of comedy crime caper, and then sort of a darker thriller. Mm-hmm. So they're all standalones, but one of the standalones, the characters have evolved, and I can see them going further.
Good.
And in my short stories, I also have characters called Riley and Liz, who are two Toronto police officers, and they seem to have a nice life of their own, and that seems to be going somewhere with the short stories.
And which of the three genres do you prefer?
Really the comedy caper. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think you probably find readers will too. Like, we have enough troubles in our lives that sometimes something light is what we need.
Yeah, I agree. And sometimes I read a lot of crime novels and I'm getting frustrated with all the ridiculous scenarios these people get into.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm tending to get away from that.
Good. Well, perhaps you could read to us from one of your novels.
Okay, actually, I'll read from a short story, and this is called The Band Was Playing Stella. The band was playing Stella, Stella by Starlight, one of Victor Young's big movie score numbers from way back. It had been the main theme from The Uninvited, a film noir ghost story from 1944. Ned Washington had added the lyrics to it in 1946, but this band didn't have a singer and had its own take on it. I'd lost track. What do they call it? Oh, right, playing outside. Well, I wish that's what they would do. Take their interpretation outside, maybe down to the garbage dump. But right then, I didn't know what that song would come to mean to me. I don't have a problem with what other musicians play, but I don't have to listen to it either. I play alto sax, and I stick with ballads and tunes that my Aunt Jane, if I had an Aunt Jane, could recognize. I had first heard the tune on Charlie Parker's version, recorded in 1952, and that one had stuck with me. I was thinking of paying the tab and leaving when the sax and trumpet guys came back around, and there we were again, listening to Young's great melody. That was when I looked up and saw the two mugs standing inside the foyer looking like little Bo Peep's lost sheep. Maybe it was the fedoras or the polyester plaid sports coats, but they reeked of copper. Louis, the self-styled maitre d' of this humble establishment, conferred with them and then shambled over to my bar stool. It didn't take a Harvard degree to figure these two were on business and not paying customers. I think they're looking for you, Max. That was all he gave me as an introduction before they had me braced, one each side, against the bar. Max Brand, that's you, right? The older cop, the one in the green fedora, asked. Yeah, that's me. So what can I do for you, gentlemen? You representing Eddie Muldoon? The other cop, the one with the brown fedora, asked. Yeah, Eddie's a client. And you're not here to play patty cake, so has something happened to Eddie? You could say that, Green Fedora said. He's at the morgue. Trouble digesting a bunch of 32s. Is that what you're packing? The Green Fedora was perched up high, resting on two large ears that had taken some beatings over the years. I flapped open my jacket to show him my piece. Nah, Smith & Wesson 38. It's registered, and I'm licensed. So where were you earlier this evening? Brown Fedora asked. I looked at my watch, surprised to see that it was nearly 1 o'clock. Maybe the band was better than I'd thought. Right here, and you can check that with Louis, and my bar tab. Detective Sergeant Brown, the Green Fedora, and Detective Green, the Brown Fedora, took me to the morgue, where I had no trouble identifying the late Eddie Muldoon. Thief, con artist, philanderer, forger, but otherwise a really sweet guy. It was 2 days later when I next had a visit from someone interested in the late Eddie Muldoon. I was at the bar again, where I'd first learned of Eddie's demise. The band was into its rendition of Stella by Starlight again, but this time it was more laid back, the ballad that Victor Young had intended. This time there were no coppers with their veiled threats and innuendos. This time, an apparition that had me spellbound stood before me. Petite and blonde, with a turned-up nose and sapphire blue eyes, she sported a cute pageboy hairstyle. Her tailored blue shot silk suit fit her like a glove, the hem of the skirt a modest 2 inches above her knees. "Mr. Brand, that is you, isn't it?" "At least the maitre d' said that's who you were," the apparition said. "Yes, I'm Max Brand, miss," I said, nearly falling off the bar stool to take a small hand in mine. Up close I could see that she was a few years older than I'd first thought. Stella Fox. I was a friend of Eddie Muldoon. The police told me that you represented him. I don't know what that means or what you were doing for Eddie, but I know that he was in some kind of trouble. So, Miss Fox, what can I do for you? It's Stella. Please call me Stella, please. Okay, Stella, so what can I do for you? Well, I would like to see the people who killed Eddie brought to justice, and, I said. Stella sighed. Well, there is the matter of a few million in treasury bonds that Eddie was holding for me. And I think I'll leave it there for now.
Thanks, Alan. Now we'll take a short break.